Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome back longtime guest, Fred Schenkelberg. How are you doing, Fred?
Pretty good, James. Thanks. And I think you're old. You used to introduce me as old friend or something like that, and I took exception to that. But we've been doing this for a while, haven't we? And I enjoy your show. I really, really do. And I'm glad it's doing so well, too. So I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, it's been over 3 years now that we've had this show. So you're one of the first guests and you continue to be a guest. So always appreciate that and glad you're enjoying it.
Oh yeah, very much so. And you're rocking I know you're on the reliability.fm network, and your show just keeps on growing in popularity. So it attests to that people are talking about it and handing it off. And so that's all good. I really appreciate that you're part of the network and your show's doing so well. You know, what comes across in your show, James, is that you just have fun. And it's a little bit of education, a little bit of teaching here and there, which is great. I think that's a good thing. But you also ask good questions and enjoy talking to the folks you talk to. And so that's all good.
Yeah, I try to ask questions that I need answered. I'll be honest.
Yeah. Well, you know, I keep running into questions with the clients and with people sending feedback to Ascendo all the time. And one of them, and I copied you on it the other day, was this somebody called and said, hey, we want to do predictive maintenance and we want it. And we've got all these different facilities and we've got old equipment, new equipment and all this stuff. And the presenting question was, we need somebody to help us know where to put the sensors. Well, wait a minute.
Let's take a step back.
Yeah, let's think about this for a second. And talk about it. But I get that regularly in consulting. It's not just the people see the Internet of Things or predictive technologies and sensing and all that stuff. And it's like, well, how strong's your statistics? How strong's your understanding of your equipment? How does it fail? And what kind of failures are you anticipating? And how well do you know your equipment? But I get questions like, oh, we want to be world class in whatever. And I'm like, or my favorite is, we just shipped our product and everything's failing. Can you help us? And I'm like, yeah. Let's usually somebody faces a problem, right? They have an issue or a problem, or they see a gap, a difference, and they phrase it oftentimes as a symptom. If we fix this symptom, we'll be good. And a big part of what we do is is ask the questions to say, well, what's the real problem we're trying to solve here? Is it a work practice thing? Is it a not specifying your product well? What is it?
Yeah, is it a design issue? Is it not understanding failure modes? You know, it could be a variety of different things.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's I know that you and I have talked about just how do you get started building a program and where do you get going? And oftentimes it's, you got to know where you're at, and it's that first assessment piece of it, you know. And that's another thing I'm getting always in my consulting the last 15 years or so, it's come in waves. And somebody asked me that last week, says, so what do you typically work on? And I says, well, if you would have asked me 5 years ago, it was all solar energy companies. It was inverters and panels and trackers and all kinds of cool stuff. If you would have asked me 3 years ago, it was all medical devices. It was, you know, implanted stuff and blood analyzing equipment, surgery equipment. It was just a wave of those things. This year, it's been all startups. And startups are great. Because there's so much desire to get it right. And that's something I've seen more so over the last couple of years, and more so, and it's acute with startups. They recognize they can't ship a product and it not work.
No, because they will fail to leave the startup phase.
That's right. But the bigger companies are feeling the pressure of all these major recalls. It's, you know, with was the Galaxy, the Samsung guys have done it twice now, right? And they stopped the launch of the Fold phone. You know, they can weather it. They're a huge company, and they can deal with it. And they still sell a lot of equipment and phones, but they're saying, all right, no, it's not ready. Let's pull back and delay the launch. But it's one thing after another. People are really feeling the pressure to get to market. And more so now, people are saying, well, we got to get it right. We got to get the reliability there and the quality there. Because I think the market is pushing back more and more and saying, hey, just because you offer a warranty is not good enough. It can't go down.
I don't want to have to use that warranty.
That's right. And same in the factory world, is downtime is killing us. We need to fix that. And so focusing on preventative and avoiding issues and understanding their equipment is a growing trend. I don't know. You talk to a lot of folks in that world.
Yeah. It's very similar, right? People want to minimize that downtime. They don't want to, some organizations will deal tracking warranties, mm-hmm. but very few do. But they would rather just not have the failure at all than have to deal with the warranty portion of it. But a lot of them, I find, are jumping ahead. And like you said, well, where should we put these sensors? Well, there's a whole bunch that needs to go on long before that to make sure that you're minimizing downtime. Did you design it properly? Did you give good specifications? Are we operating it within condition? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If it is failing, what are those unique failure modes? Have we even conducted an FMEA on this stuff?
That's right. Yeah.
Right. And then from there, did we even commission it or install it and commission it properly?
Yeah.
Right. Those things will go a long way to preventing a lot of those potential failures that come up versus, hey, we're just going to send your stuff and fix it before it fails. Well, if you install it, design it, commission it properly, you may eliminate a lot of those failures from occurring in the first place.
And then you can really focus on the ones that remain, and predictive might be the right way to go, or it might be just an aggressive inspection process. It depends, right? It always depends.
Yeah. Yeah, but you have to understand the failures first. Just throwing sensors everywhere isn't going to solve the problems.
That's right. You may be perfectly measuring the wrong thing. It's
exactly.
You know, you can have great data and everything looks great, but it still goes down every Tuesday at 3 o'clock. Why? Let's figure this out.
Exactly.
A couple of weeks ago, somebody called and says, hey, we want to move from a manual process for our planning, scheduling, and everything else to this CMMS system that we got a great introductory offer on. And from what I understand it, the brochure says it'll solve all of our problems. I'm like, well, no.
Well, the first thing you need to do is understand your business process.
That's right. And, yeah. You know, what's important? What are you focusing on? Where do you got to go? What's the right strategy? And let's get that working first manually. Then you can automate it.
Exactly. And it was interesting because I was at a conference a couple weeks ago and I sat in on a bunch of the IoT industry 4.0, big data presentations. And I asked a question in, I think, two different ones. I asked the same question. I said, well, this is great. We're capturing all this information. It's going to the cloud. We're using algorithms to figure out what's going on and so on and so forth. I said, but how does this link to the asset hierarchy? And do your customers have a good asset hierarchy so they actually know where they're collecting this data in their system and so on and so forth? And the one gentleman pretty much said, well, that's kind of disconnected. We don't need an asset hierarchy to do this stuff. Well, maybe you can deal with it on an individual by individual basis, but you're missing out on entire macro trends if you don't have that in place.
Yeah.
You don't understand the operating context of those things and how they fit in with other things. And are they critical or versus not critical? You don't have that stuff then. So how did the customers actually deal with that? Well, they sensor everything. Well, is it really the most cost-effective approach? Probably not.
Probably not. But we got cool sensors and we got cool data analytics and we get this great dashboard. Look at our dashboard. It's great. I'm like, okay, so what do you do with it? Is it important? Has your downtime actually changed at all? Are you spending 3 more engineers' time and not fixing anything? You know,
that's the other piece. We can get all this data and we can get these recommendations to act on things. But if you don't have a good work management process or storeroom process, are you actually going out and shutting those things down proactively, planning them down, making that repair before it fails? Or are you just saying, hey, I know that's going to fail, and you watch it until it actually fails?
That's right. Yeah. It's sort of like getting on YouTube, I suppose. It's wait for your time to completely run out and realize that you were supposed to be somewhere else. But yeah, it's I've been in factories though long before Internet of Things was going on, and they had tons of data, terabytes of data. And what irked me was they'd sum it all up and do a daily or a shift average uptime. That was it. And like, well, what equipment? We just know that it's this bottling piece of equipment. That's the one that takes us down the most, right? Well, where's your data? How do you know that? How are you dealing with what data you have now? Are you gathering the right data? Well, that's too hard to do. We just go fix it.
Yeah, and you're not eliminating those defects, and you're going to be fixing it again at a later date, and again and again and again.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so maybe nothing's changed in reliability world, and it's the same in the product development. Yet I am seeing more and more emphasis, and I think you see it in your business too, is people are saying, oh, we got to get this right. We got to focus on, well, I don't know of anybody that said, hey, we want to get hold of the statistics and do the analysis correctly. I think they want to solve a problem. And we often then break the bad news to them that you need a statistician. But it's one of those things where I think overall our markets are demanding higher quality and reliability. And that's been a gradual increase in pressure from our markets over the last 10 years. And I think more and more people are saying, oh, we got to get it right. Otherwise, it's just not, that's such a critical piece to market acceptance these days.
It is. There's more competition. Mm-hmm. Consumers want more. They're not willing to spend money on something that fails quickly or often. There is that external pressure that's coming on. Then there's also the internal pressure of not wanting to have warranty liabilities out there.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's good to be a reliability professional. It certainly works out pretty well.
Yeah, it's definitely a busy time. That's for sure.
Yeah, it is. And I'm over the last, I don't know, 20 years or so, I've been in these positions where people know I have a lot of connections. And so I would regularly get calls from people saying, hey, do you know anybody that could come work for us? Or do you know anybody that's hiring? And it's often tracked with the economy. Right. If I get a bunch of people looking for work, it was a precursor to a downturn in the economy. And vice versa, if I'm getting a lot of companies asking to hire somebody, it was, you know, you can name your price basically if you're negotiating for salary, because there weren't that many people out looking for work. A couple weeks ago, I actually had I was working with a client and they were trying to hire somebody, and I called a couple folks that I thought would be great fits for their program. And I often do that just because it's a great way to keep in touch with your network. You know, hey, George, I was thinking of you. Here's an opportunity I just heard about. You might be interested in taking a look at it. And then, oh, by the way, how are you doing? What are you working on? That kind of stuff. And it's been a great networking trigger for me to stay in touch with people. But I called, use the name George. I called George and I explained the position and what it would be. It was a director of reliability and quality. And he was like, oh, that sounds really interesting. So where are these guys located? And he goes, oh, no, that's more than 20 miles away. I'm not going to change jobs. I like my short commute now. I think it was 40 miles for him. And he goes, nah, I'm good where I am. No, it's too far. But that's been the trend this last year is it's always been hard to recruit people into the San Francisco Bay Area. It's just a high cost of living area. Yet now it's people even in the area are going, oh, that's a great job. Nah, it's too far away. I had three people tell me that. And I'm like, wow, the market is strong. It's
yeah, everyone's happy where they are. They're not looking. There's a strong demand for reliability professionals. And I see that all over the place.
Yeah.
From an asset management standpoint, we need REs. We need good maintenance planners. We need technicians. We need experienced maintenance supervisors, managers, those sorts of things. There's a very big demand for that right now.
There is. And it, well, I remember at the SMRP conference, there were a number of folks talking about, and I'm sure you've seen this in other conferences since, that the, what did they call it? The silver wave, the number of folks retiring out of maintenance and reliability positions is not being replaced by trades folks coming up or engineers coming into the ranks. We just don't have both the population and or the interest to fill the demand. And as more and more people retire, a lot of the working knowledge is walking out the door.
Yeah. And that is a trend. Everywhere I go, I hear the same thing. Doesn't matter what industry, what state, what country. I was in China a few weeks ago, and they're even saying how hard it is to find a reliability engineer over there.
Wow. That would be a commute. That would be a long commute.
Definitely is. I'll tell you that.
Well, it's amazing. It's, I know that there's dozens of university programs. Vast majority of reliability professionals don't have a degree in reliability. They kind of drop into that position or get tapped on their shoulder. Yet it does take some skill. It takes some time to come up to speed. Was it 2 days ago? I got a message from a person. It was a really nice compliment on the Speaking of Reliability show. They said, you know, I usually listen to your show in the car and I often want to, provide a comment or some feedback and stuff. But by the time I get to the office, you know, events overwhelm me and I don't get around to it. But this time I had to make a special effort to get in touch. And I thought, oh, that's great. And he goes, I'm a new reliability engineer. I'm just graduating with a degree. My company sent me to go get a degree in this stuff. And they taught me all this cool stuff about data analysis and failure mechanisms and all these high zoots skills, which work great in the lab, right? Or they work great on the piece of paper. But he said, and I've come to the realization, it's not that clean in the real world. And and he said, I need a mentor. And my company doesn't have a reliability engineer. That's why they sent me to school to go become that person. But I don't want to make rookie mistakes. So where do I find the advice? Where do I find the guidance and that kind of thing? You know, oh, that's a cool idea. But it's one of those, I think some of the barriers are, I mean, if you're in, say, in one factory and the factory across the street's got more experienced guy, you're not, if you, even if you're not competitors, there's always this underlying fear. And I thank the lawyers for this, is of trade secrets and, you know, of sharing dirty laundry and, oh, we're having trouble with this vendor. And that becomes a basis for a slander lawsuit or something like that. It's like, oh, come on.
Yeah. It's, you want to get out there. You want to help mentor and share knowledge with those that are coming into it. I would not be where I am today if I didn't have those people doing it formally, informally, even through their articles and books, some of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's this big part of why we do podcasting. It allows us to capture and create, you know, here's ways we solve problems. Here's the ways we think about stuff. Here's ways that, you know, you can approach different things. And it's those questions that come in that are often sparks for topics for us. In your show, you do a lot of interviews with folks that are authors or are folks that are well-known in the industry, and you're capturing a lot of that essence in your conversations with them. So it's a piece of it, but it's not the same of, you know, hey, James, I got this problem today. Can I give you a call talk it over? Or let's meet for lunch regularly and go over this stuff. setting up a formalized program, I think, runs into the headwind of trade secrets and liabilities and all those other things. And I think that's unfortunate.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you are doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com. Well, with that though, one of the things that I find individuals can do to help with some of that knowledge, to help understand how do we apply this in the real world, and that is something that people have been doing for hundreds or thousands of years, and that's just simply reading a book on the topic.
Yeah. Can I read that on my phone?
I'm old school. I hate reading on my phone or my computer. I don't like it. I want a physical book in my hand.
I printed two articles yesterday out just because, I couldn't focus. Even though I know on the screen I could highlight, I could, you know, do all kinds of fancy stuff, but it's
not the same.
It's not the same. Yeah, we're old school that way. But yeah, read a book.
So with that, have you read any good books lately?
Well, the one I'm working on right now is on garden design, so I don't think that relates to our conversation. Well, I published one, and it was and it was kind of that mentorship thing. Art Hart wrote a book. Now I'm drawing a complete blank. Reliability. Oh, I'm drawing a blank on the title. I'll have to look it up. And he retired from HP, and he was working in a division that had a very, very strong reliability program. And I think I ended up reading that book about six times as I'm going through and edited and getting it ready for publication. But he talks about the interplay of all the different tools. It's one thing to master FMEA and fault tree and block diagrams and Weibull analysis and all those other things. But if they don't work together, you lose a lot of synergy, and you need to apply the appropriate tool for the appropriate problem. And he really brings that home. And it's a short book. It's on the order of 100 pages, but it's very succinct and very compelling in that you got to think about what you're doing is the basic message. You just don't apply stuff. And it goes back to what we're talking about with the Internet of Things or CMMS. You don't just slap that on the program and hope everything gets better. It's got to integrate with how you do business and how you make decisions. And so that was one that in the field that I've read recently. And it's really more of a product development book, but it's a reliability side. You have the same principles of what you do and what tools you use and what processes you use have to fit within your organization and support it and help you make better decisions. So I thought that was a pretty good topic.
Yeah, definitely sounds interesting. I'll make sure to link to that in the show notes.
Okay.
The reason I asked that question is I was teaching a class a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had a wide range of people in there from technicians to reliability engineers and anywhere in between. And we're discussing various topics, and someone's like, well, how do you know that? Well, I read this book. And it was interesting. That's why I bring it up now and so on and so forth. And they're like, how many books do you read? And on average, one novel size book a week on average. Some weeks are better than others. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, how do you find time for that? Why do you spend so much time on that? I need to know what's going on. I need to be aware of what else is going on. Because if I live in my little bubble, I can't teach this stuff properly. I'm not understanding the full aspects of things. So the only way to improve one of the only ways to improve my knowledge is to read a lot of those books. So I asked the class, when's the last time any of you have read a book on maintenance reliability? And very few of them have even raised their hands that they read a book on the topic, let alone recently.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's a huge area that can drive a major improvement in your knowledge and your ability to understand concepts and apply those concepts to those not laboratory friendly settings.
That's right. Yeah. Now, I'm thinking of my bookshelf upstairs, and every now and then I go through Amazon and search for reliability engineering books, right? And if you list them by lowest price, there's often books that are 5, 10, 20 years old, yet still relevant, still great information, but they're just trying to clear house on these things. And you can get books for less than a dollar. And you bundle up a bunch of them, you get them free shipping on top of it. And so I have probably 200 books on reliability engineering topics. And I can honestly say I've read probably half of those and scanned or skimmed the others to get a gist of what's in it and kind of get it into the pecking order. But I read stuff. It's probably, I open a book to reference something or to research something or to understand something every week. And then but it's that first pass through it and reading it that gives me a sense of what's where and how things are approached. And I read it for improving my ability to explain things to other people and to write about things. But it's also, what are the topics that people are putting out and what are the types of tools that fit us and stuff? So a lot of my writing on Ascendo is based on what I'm picking up in these books. But I also read, I'm looking for how many ways can we screw up MTBF? And that subject for another whole topic.
Well, you have an entire blog dedicated to that, if I remember correctly.
That's right. That's right. But also, when I pick up a new hobby or a topic, like we moved into a new home a couple of years ago, and we have all this cool space and great sun and my wife and I are both interested in gardening and creating both edible gardens and flower gardens. And so we're both reading books on garden design and about plants and plant habits. And then I'm now getting more and more into how do you propagate stuff? How do you properly start seeds? How do you, all of the gardening type stuff. And I probably have a dozen books from the last 2 years that are on various aspects of gardening that have caught my attention, and listen to podcasts on it, and are regularly searching for topics and reading through articles and blogs. But that's just and we've talked about that before, I think, James.
Yeah, just that continuing education piece, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The professional development piece. I finished a book not too long ago, Checklist Manifesto, and it's not related. It's not a reliability book, but what we learn in it applies directly to a lot of things we're trying to work and improve within our organizations.
That's right.
Checklist Manifesto is really, what are checklists? What are good checklists? Why are they used? How are they used? And a mm-hmm. whole bunch of different case studies from various industries. And, I'm reading the book. I was thinking back to some of the basic checklists I would get for equipment inspections or scene and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. Realizing that they're not very good. They're actually rather poor. So yeah. The whole book, while it's not related to reliability engineering, it directly applies to how do we reduce human error in the completion of work, completion of designs, and all those other things. So it just gives another perspective on how do we further reduce that unreliability, that human, or improve that human performance piece. And it's things like that that I find make a big, big difference.
Yeah. No, it's very true. And I think once you get started on that, you can apply this stuff and you never really know how or where as you read through a book. I'm often, my wife has finally made me stop starting new projects. Those are ideas. Let's finish some projects first. You can only do so many at a time. But if something catches my attention, like a few years ago, a book by Nancy Durante is called Resonate, I think it is. And she also had another book called Slideology. And I started reading through those and it's on how to make memorable presentations, how to make great presentations. And yeah, it's about making presentations. It's about creating a story, essentially, of how do you get the point across. And it's not go through the facts, man. It's not just the engineering dull stuff that we normally do. So it made me think about the objective we have is to convey knowledge, to persuade somebody to do something, to invoke a change. Well, if you craft that well, in a compelling story, essentially, and with paying attention to cadence, you can get that point across. You can persuade people. Whereas the way we grew up in engineering was, here's the problem, here's five solutions, here's four vendors, assessments of it, and here's the one we recommend, right? Well, great. That doesn't help us understand what we're trying to do here.
No, exactly.
Yeah, but it's, I think once you get started reading, whether it's blogs or books or all of that and listening to podcasts, and you recognize that, hey, that generates improvements in the way I go about doing business and solving problems, then you just do it more. You find the time to make it happen because it in the long run, it saves you time. You become way more valuable and efficient.
Absolutely. Now, what I want to do, though, is I want to ask our listeners to share their favorite books.
That's a good idea.
Whether it's a strict reliability engineering book, whether it's with, you know, maintenance reliability, or if it's another book, like you mentioned, Slideology, which is one I have on my shelf and I use quite often, that might not be directly related, but you've used it in your maintenance and reliability or asset management journey. Share those with us. You can find me on LinkedIn or Twitter, at Reliable James on Twitter or on LinkedIn, James Kvosvik, or you can email it directly to me, jameskvosvik@iridicio.com. And I'm going to pull together a list and put that out there so everyone can see what everyone is learning about, what they're trying to get better at, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. And I think it's still live. I have a poll up for people that, what are the recommended reading for those searching or seeking to become a CRE? Now, that same list is also good desk references, right? For all the variety and range of tools and activities around reliability engineering. I can send you that list also if they want to do a quick survey. What's their recommendations?
Yeah, that'd be great, because then I can incorporate that into the list. And I'll make it available for everyone.
That'd be great. That'd be cool. Well, I think I'm heading back off to the bookstore pretty soon then.
Yeah, my Amazon list is quite large and extensive.
Yeah. It makes a difference. And I like working as a consultant. I like working with companies that get it. It's not so much I have to go in and teach them the difference between FMEA and then a fault tree analysis. That's fine. I enjoy working with folks and bringing them up to speed. Yet I really relish the ones where they have a good program, they know what they're doing, and they recognize that they need to make the next step. They need to get a little bit better. And those are enjoyable because you're already working with a really good program and polishing it. And every one of them is different and more challenging. Teaching the basics, I know we got to do it. We need to share that knowledge and bring people up so we get more people that later we can polish their programs. But the ones that are reading and understanding what they're doing, they're better clients. They're better students.
Yeah, and the ones that make it out of that basic level, they want to be there. They're willing to learn. They're not being told to show up.
That's right.
I find, yeah. Generally.
Yeah, it's perfect. Cool. Well, let's see what your readers say, the listeners say, and see how many of our listeners are actually readers.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. So I think that's a good point, Fred, to let you go free and get done all that work you got to get done this weekend. So
I've got a few things on the list for this Friday.
Excellent. Well, it's been good talking to you. It's good to have you back on the show. It's been a while. But before we go, what do you have on the go with maintenance and reliability? I know you got Ascendo Reliability. You got Speaking of Reliability. Are you doing anything else, conferences, so on and so forth?
You know, I think about the time I went to SMRP last year, it kind of all gelled, and I decided not to do business travel anymore, not to get on a plane for travel. So at the end of the year, I started turning down clients that were outside of the immediate area, or I would hand them off to other people and that I knew would do a good job for them and get them up board. But I really want to focus on Ascendo Reliability. And so we're improving the logos. We're trying to improve the experience of how to find equipment. We're working on getting more content. I'm bringing on two new pieces that Nancy Reagan is going to syndicate her stuff through Ascendo, and we're setting that up now. It should be out pretty soon, which would be of interest to a lot of your audience. She does just amazing little short videos and with really cool points, and does a nice job of putting them together. So I'm excited to have her with Ascendo.
Yeah, she's been a frequent guest, and she's actually going to be recording a podcast with me Monday morning. So
yeah, excellent. Yeah, she's has a very common sense, very practical, pragmatic approach to maintenance reliability, and does a good job. So, but I like the way she's. She'll find the strangest thing, you know, and pull out her camera. And I realize it looks like it's spontaneous and everything else, but I realize on being on a producing side of these things that there's a lot of work goes into it. So I appreciate her putting these things together and happy to share that with the audience. But I'm basically pulling back from consulting, especially when it's travel. So I'm focusing on getting Ascendo up to speed and cleaning up the rough edges, making it a significant place to go on the internet to find what you need related to reliability. So the reliability.fm network, the articles, which James, you contribute on a weekly basis, has been great. We're looking to expand the webinar program, the resources areas, but we're also looking at significantly expanding the offering of courses, both ones that we create and others that we like Eruditio offers and feature them on that site. So people can find what's available and get good recommendations. So it's not just list everything, which we also do, but for the ones that we recommend, we're trying to edit that to filter the ones that are worth recommending. And so we're still working on building all that out, but the site itself is growing. I think we're at 100,000 visitors a month now, overall, depending on which metric you look at. But it keeps growing, and I keep hearing very, very positive things from people that are visiting the site or run across the site. So we're kind of at a spot where let's get the flush it out and make it easier to use and see where we can take it. So that's where I'm at most of the time, is on ascendoreliability.com.
Excellent. Well, I know, you know, Ascendo continues to grow. It's, you know, we syndicate my blog, the podcast there. It's been a go-to reference for a lot of stuff for me as well. So I'm excited to see it grow and excited to see it, you know, refined over time. I know it takes time. It's not easy. But you took that first big step of not getting on an airplane for work anymore, which some days I'm very jealous of.
Sorry about that.
but definitely interested to see how it comes out and looking forward to continuing to contribute to it.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are you guys up to? Besides getting on an airplane, so I won't bring that up again. Oh, sorry.
I got a couple conferences coming up. We are expecting a third child soon.
Oh, congratulations.
Well, not soon, in September. So that's going to be another significant change on the home life.
Yeah.
But yeah, for work, just a couple conferences. I'll be at the symposium in June for SMRP's annual conference, and Main Train right now. Those are the only three I have on the books for the rest of the year.
Okay.
At this point. So.
No, sounds like, as always, James, you stay busy and out there. So that's cool.
All right. Well, Fred, thanks again, and I appreciate it.
All right. No problem, James. We'll talk to you again someday. Well, hopefully soon.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.